Mostly just updates. Looks like we wrapped up all of our action items from last month, so shouldn't take too long here. Thanks for dealing with the adjusted time. Before we jump in, anything else that anybody had to add to the agenda or anything else that needs to be discussed today? Cool.
This is Chris. I guess the only thing that maybe we want to talk about are fish counts that Stephanie Burfield was asking about earlier this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Doug actually left me a message earlier today, and we were talking briefly before other folks got on, so I think, yeah, we'll just discuss that a little bit at the end. Thanks, Chris.
Hey, this is Ryan. The only thing I would add maybe would be a follow-up to the action item on the agenda. Obviously, it's listed as complete in terms of sending that stuff out, but in terms of discussion on next steps.
Sure. Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, let's just jump into that one. Ryan, I know you were going to discuss that a little bit with Dan Peck and kind of look at what we had and figure out if it's still relevant or not and maybe how we tackle the first bit of that thing.
Yeah, so I was down there last week, met with Dan, and kind of looked over the design, you know, kind of walked the facility. I think it sounds like what you mentioned last month, Andy, was that a phased approach is probably the hand that will be dealt, and I think that is what it is. We can deal with it. I think from a, I don't know if it's this group or from a priority standpoint, I think we just need to lay out, you know, what those phases would look like in terms of, you know, do we start at the intake and does this project include some work at the intake which would allow increased water flow to the brood pond? So that might be kind of almost a project in its own, would just be the intake modifications. Did, I guess in your mind, Andy, did you see that as part of the scope of work on this or to be determined?
I don't know. I've known that it's like kind of been attached to this whole idea of, you know, rehabbing those brood ponds there. I mean, the main thing that we're kind of getting at here, you know, and this is what I think Lance's idea with this as well, was to improve the pre-spawning mortality that we're dealing with up there. So, I mean, obviously something better than an earthen pond is going to improve that, but at the same time, if, you know, a lot of these causes of pre-spawn mortality are temperature related or flow related, you know, low oxygen concentrations and such, then, you know, increased water supply may need to be a kind of a central solution or component of the solution in this case.
Yeah, so when I looked through that summary report, and there's some language in there about NIMS criteria for flow, our current raw water flow to the pond is about 25% of the needed flow. I think that so that pond full needed about 4,000 GPM. Currently, Dan's able to put roughly 1,000 GPM into that pond of raw water. So I guess in terms of a decision matrix, you know, if we weren't going to address the intake initially to get the flow, then we're looking at probably some kind of a pretty substantial reuse system to get that flow, that desired or needed flow rate. So in terms of a design, I guess that's kind of where Dan and I started is, you know, do we get increased water rate and water flow from the intake, or look at some large reuse system, which obviously wasn't in that 2012 design. So just kind of throw that out there. In terms of the plans, I think a lot of that looks good. The one suggestion that Dan and I came up with was rather than having three holding ponds, so they'd be like 10 by, I think, 184 feet long, we kind of went with a design in our minds, maybe more something like Foster, where you cut the length of those in half, and you had, so that would increase the total number of holding ponds to six. They'd still both be, you know, 90 feet long, so you'd have six 10 by 90s, and I think that'd give you then kind of a more centralized spawning area located in the middle. Some benefit to those long ponds, but man, you imagine even with an auto crowder, that would be a long push with an auto crowder to crowd that length that'd be one real small tweak I think I would look at in that design, would be to cut the length of the ponds in half, have a center, kind of a center work channel, and move the spawn area to the middle of the pond rather than down at one end.
Hey, Ryan, do you know what the water right is?
Yeah, the water right is for Salmon Creek is 85 CFS. My understanding is the availability, I think, is unlimited, is my understanding. If we didn't look at a 75% or greater reuse system, I think another option would be to take water from that outflow channel where the ponds and raceways outflow and discharge back to the creek. So that might be an option. So either one of those, either a reuse system or a recirculation system, would obviously both require filters and pumping and whatnot, or at least pumps. But if water availability and addressing the intake work is an option, that might at least cut down on the long-term operation costs of not having multiple pumps recirculating water. But definitely some options there, I think.
Well, doesn't sound like that'll be a hurdle then.
No, I think I'll talk with our folks. One hurdle on the intake work could be passage, and I don't know if that would mean passage in Salmon Creek or passage just on the bypass channel. There's that little, the intake doesn't actually sit on Salmon Creek, it sits on that little, I guess I call it a bypass channel or intake channel. So I need to kind of get with our fish passage guys to understand what passage would look like if, whether it would be on that side channel or on the main stem. That, I guess, from the hatchery perspective, from a fish health standpoint, that might change how we'd want to move forward, providing passage on Salmon Creek. While it could be beneficial for a lot of reasons, could be certainly put the hatchery at risk from a fish health standpoint.
And Ryan, you were saying that the water supply right now is about 25% of what was recommended. Who is that recommended by, or what study was looking at that?
So it's in the it's in that stuff that I think Chris sent out. It's the draft facilities plan for broodstock holding. So I guess ODFW folks wrote that report in the summer report. And then I think the recommendations were based on NIMS criteria for minimum volume and flow.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. So, sorry, what's that?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds like it's probably a good idea to increase the amount of water that's available there. Of course, you know, redoing the intake and some of that piping and everything will increase the cost for sure. Probably pushes us even more towards breaking this up into discrete components that we could tackle over the course of a couple of years instead of going for a big ask. So,
right. So
really, I guess it'd be kind of figuring out what is the order in which these things must occur, and then kind of a time frame for, you know, if we're looking at having to cut water to the facility or reduce water to the facility to do some of this construction, when could that occur, when, you know, best time of year for that, and kind of what that would look like.
Yep, agreed. And then I guess the, you know, another next step would be to revisit the drawings, make some revisions, and then potentially, I mean, you guys are probably way more familiar with this than I am, but then kind of, I guess, next step would be work on some, you know, construction plans.
Right.
So I'm happy to, you know, kind of continue to work with Dan if there's specific things that we want to address, or if I realize size. This is obviously tied to, you know, budget issues. I get that, but whatever you guys think, we want to move on this. I'm good.
Okay. Hey, Greg Taylor, any, I don't know, advice or feeling on whether or not to try to do this, you know, utilizing ODFW engineering and smaller contractors, or whether to push this more towards like a PDT within the Corps and involve our folks? I'm hesitant to go that route with the PDT because it's just going to blow the cost out of the water, but...
How much do you want to pay and how much time do you want to spend?
Yeah, exactly.
It
would be easier from a cost and then from an efficiency standpoint to have ODFW manage this. It will definitely be cheaper and faster. But I would also... make sure the environmental gets involved early in this, because there's all these environmental issues you don't think about, and they tend to take a lot of time. I'm assuming we'll have to go through, I mean, these fish are listed under the Endangered Species Act, the hatchery fish, so at a minimum we're going to have to go through some sort of conservation process. I would get our environmental section involved early so that it doesn't slow down the rest of it.
Sure. That makes sense.
So this is Chris. In the past, under the cooperative agreement, we've been able to utilize ODFW resources fairly easily. We just want to consider, now that we're going to contract, what that might mean in the future. In terms of what we want to get done, we consider that too.
Yeah, this is Ryan. I'll just throw out too. I think I mentioned this last month, but quite frankly, our engineers are looking to bring on at least one more project manager slash engineer. But we're also looking at a $10 million deferred maintenance list of projects for the next 6 years. If I brought this up, I'd probably get laughed at, and we'd be looking at like 2023 as a potential option for our engineers. So, unfortunately, all good stuff our folks are able to get done, but for projects like this, I'm not real certain that they would be able to probably even assist. Certainly not.
Hey, Brian, do you think they could, that you guys could administer a contract though, to a contract, you know, to have somebody else do the work, essentially?
Possibly. I could have that conversation with Ryan McCormick, our chief engineer. From a contracting standpoint, he recently told me that takes their staff almost as much staff time as doing the design. Maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but anyway, it still is a staff load. But I can ask a question.
All right. Well, I guess let me talk to some folks here on this side, chat with some environmental people, and then I'll get Tammy's feel for it as well, Ryan. But yeah, I understand you guys are trying to execute a lot of money right now and got a whole bunch of different projects. So maybe see what we could do here on this end.
Sounds good. I mean, you probably don't have a clear answer, but in terms of you talked about this as a line in the FY18 budget. Somewhere between a million and 10 million. What's your sense of where this could land? And obviously, asking you to speculate a little bit, but
Right. I haven't seen the FY18 budget. I know Tammy got a brief look at it, and the first indication I heard was she's about $1 million short. Her total program is like 22 or 23 million, I think. So, not a huge chunk, but it'll still be impactful for sure. As far as small little projects like this, sometimes these are the first to get cut, unfortunately. But what I kind of had in my mind, and what I've talked about with Tammy, was like a couple $100,000, $200,000-$300,000 or something like that to kick it off. But like you said, I mean, that's kind of speculation at this point.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would think of that. I think probably whether it's our folks or our folks or somebody through a contract, kind of going back through that 2012 report and cleaning up those drawings, making some modifications, and completing a set of plans or prints or evaluation or whatever might be a good first step or next step, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds good.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Well, maybe we'll leave this action item on here just so we can revisit it in the coming months and make sure we're still making progress on it. Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to updates then. Greg, Marion Forks and Minto, what do you got?
Marion Forks continues to be pretty smoky. That fire, along with four other ones that are burning from this last thunderstorm, have a pretty smoky up there. We ran a couple of loads to Brightonbush today, and the Detroit Lake area is pretty smoky. Brightonbush up by there it was clear, but been pretty nasty breathing up there. Everything up there is going well. We finished up the marking program. Numbers and size are looking good on the fish. Finished up all the high lake docking except for a few fish, Braziller. Everything's going well up there. Down here, collection continues to be pretty steady. We got four loads to the Brightonbush this week. We got two loads for the north tomorrow. Fish are looking pretty good. Mortality still fairly low. Even a little bit of sunburn issue on those adults, but mortality's been low. Obviously, everybody heard we had a little bit of a crane issue. Since that's been looked at and one tagged out, we've made five loads with the other crane and no problems. That's about it.
Cool. How's it working with that new protocol when you guys use the crane, Greg?
Yeah, we sign a paper and lift it up and drop it and wait, and we look great.
Good. So not much more of a hassle?
I don't mind it. It doesn't take more than about 3 minutes, so no big deal. I'm glad to know when the brake's working. So.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have numbers up to date for non-marked and marked fish coming back for spring Chinook?
Marked fish, 2589. Non-marked, 392. So far we've taken 753 to the North Sandy M and 243 to the Brightonbush. Right now we're going to continue to reuse the resort site for outplanting. The new outplant site, that road has been shut down for fire hazards. Right now the Brightonbush resort area remains open.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Greg. All right. South Sandy M and Foster. Brett, what's going on with you guys? Brett, you still on?
Oh, I'm sorry. I hit the mute instead of unmute.
That's fine.
Our juveniles are doing well. The Chinook are all are looking good, and kind of got those fish caught up, and they're on track. The summer steelhead did get cold water disease, kind of like they normally do, but one treatment seems to take care of it, and that's been administered, and they're looking good. Mortality has dropped back down. and they're on track to meet size goals. Foster, you know, obviously the summer steelhead numbers are really low, and so we've been we've only had like 430 adults return here so far, and so we've been having other Willamette facilities and then Clackamas and Sandy save fish for us, and then we've been going over to the other facilities and picking those fish up. We're seeing some high loss in that pond, but we were had some problems with the treatment system over there and weren't able to treat like we wanted to start, so we've been working with the foster maintenance staff to troubleshoot that. We're finally starting to make some headway, and we've been treating the past 2 weeks, so that's been helping, so hopefully we'll get that under control. Chinook numbers are pretty good for us. We're above average. Right now we're at 49.15 on our hatchery fish and 212 for our unmarked fish. So not as many unmarked fish as we usually see. We're only about 4% of the return, and we average 12 to 14%. So that's down, but we've just been hauling those just unmarked fish only upstream as we normally do, and we've been hauling them up to Gordon Road to that site that you guys made up there. And that's about it. Getting ready for the upcoming spawning season.
Cool. All right. Thank you, sir. Is Kurt on the line?
I believe he's on vacation.
Okay.
He's on vacation. I think he's on vacation. So I'll fill in just real quick. No adult fish this last week collected. So a little bit of a slowdown and change. Season total. 5,344 fish, almost, actually that more than doubles the return for last year, so pretty cool there.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah, Kurt said, did say there was a few fish in the trap that they just hadn't worked before he left for vacation, so still a few fish around, but lots of fish collected.
Which we're attributing to, of course, the improvements and early trapping operations, I think. So, I mean, that's not
what else it is.
I think it's the trap and the fact we started early and started running it every day. I think that's what it is. But, you know, this is the first year that it's kind of all come together, and give it a few more years to really be confident. But I like the idea.
I hope you're right, Cam. Other than that, just I think Kerr reported last month the upcoming vacancy of the tech position there. Bruce had been there a number of years, has 40 years with ODFW, or most of them at McKenzie. So that position is now vacant, and Kerr's going through the interview process and should have somebody on board mid-September. So hopefully this time next month that position's filled. Other than that, not a whole lot going on at McKenzie.
Would it be the appropriate time to talk about getting the outplants from the McKenzie up into the South Fork?
Yeah, I think so.
Want me to dive in? Okay. I think everybody's aware there's fires everywhere. We were locked out of the South Fork McKenzie, although Chad has told me that they've got tacit permission to get up to Hard Rock, so that's our default if it's necessary. But according to the fire incident reporting system, the Box Canyon fire on the North Fork, Middle Fork side is contained, and they're, quote, mopping up. So if in fact the Box Canyon fire lays down, then technically we should be able to get in from the south to deliver fish to the desired location right at Trail Bridge, or I'm sorry, Frizzell Crossing. If it doesn't, then I think we'll have to default to the Hard Rock release site, but that's not what I think anybody wants. But we're working on it. I've got messages out to the Forest Service folks, and everybody is aware of our desires. And I think, optimistically, we might actually pull it all off.
Cool.
Hey, guys, this is Doug. I would like to add to what Cam was saying. I've been in contact with the fire boss up there on the South Fork, McKenzie, out of the McKenzie Ranger Station. His name is Jack Lewis. If you need to get in there,
I'd recommend giving him a call, and I have that phone number if anyone would like that.
Go ahead and send it to me. I've been corresponding with Ray, and he has passed on the information to another somebody else. I don't recognize the name. So, but that's good to have that contact information. Good.
Yeah, we have a waiver, both the state and the feds, to go at least the Hard Rock as long as we are in official business and in official vehicles. We just have to check in with security and tell them what we're doing, and they would like to know when we leave. This is the last thing that I was told. You know, that we're safely out.
Oh, I see. So check in, check out. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
But send me the contact info, please.
I will. And if anybody else in the group, I'll just send it to the group.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Doug. And thank you, Cam. Yeah, hopefully that Box Canyon fire gets all cleaned up and you guys can get back in there.
Yeah, but a new one popped up above Hills Creek, so we might be out of the Middle Fork this year. But, okay.
They're everywhere.
Yeah,
all right.
If you haven't got a map, you should look at it. It's talk to the old-timers that have been around doing this, and we've never had a year like this where these fires are knocking us back on our heels right in the sub-basins where we're doing our surveys. So we've had them up high before, but nothing like this.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. All right, let's move on, staying within the McKenzie sub-basin to the cougar trap. Chad, you want to give us an update there?
Sure. We were able to get the facility back in operation last Wednesday. There were some issues with the air conditioning units in the FWS building kind of overheating, so they had to shut the facility down for a few days, but they added an additional portable air conditioning unit, and I think that helped bring the temps down. There was also an issue with the liner in one of the bellows of the post-sort raceways that had tore out, so we were only down to one usable post-sort pool for a couple weeks. So that has been repaired, and we now have two functioning post-sort pools, so we should be back in business. As of Monday, we've had a total of 171 Chinook back to the facility. Of those, there's been 4 adclip fish and 167 non-marked fish. And then, of course, all those non-marked fish were double Floyd tagged and released downriver. We did have a few days where we had to release fish into the tail race due to only having one functioning post-sort pool. But of all those fish, we've had 64 recaptures back to the facility, so all of those fish have been outplanted along with the 4 adclip fish. So, yeah, that's about all I really have.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to Fall Creek.
Hi, everybody. This is Doug. So far, Fall Creek this year, we've collected 338 adult Chinook salmon. 285 of those were naturally produced, non-marked. 53 were ad-clipped. We've been able to haul all of the non-marked fish upstream to site C, the normal release site. 6 winter steelhead this year made it back. No lamprey, but mainly that was because we weren't able to trap with the construction. The construction's been moving along smoothly. The ladder it appears to be about halfway. Don't mark my words on that, but the ladder is being poured and is progressing down towards the old facility. Currently, as far as the fire up there, they have a lot of people, a fire camp down along Dexter Reservoir. There's a lot of smoke when the wind was easterly this morning. This afternoon, now that it's westerly, it seems like smoke has blown up canyon. But as far as I know, we are still able to go to Site D to release fish, our Chinook, adult Chinook. But the numbers are waning, so it's not like we're having a lot of fish to outplant.
Cool.
That actually stimulates a question. If there's only small, very small numbers of fish to outplant, would it be more efficient if the survey crew didn't show up on outplant days? I guess they have to do the water sampling, so never mind.
Yeah, we saw those guys, and we had the discussion, Cam.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had the identical discussion.
Our contract says that we will be there doing that, doing the surveys twice a week as much as we can. The fire has really thrown a monkey wrench into that, but yeah, that was an aside. Never mind. We're just going to continue doing as well as we can, and that crew will be there working with you through the season.
Good enough.
All right. Anything else for Dexter? Or, sorry, for Fall Creek before moving on to Dexter? All right. Thank you, Doug. All right. Ryan, are you giving the update for Willamette and Dexter?
Just a couple real general things. Knock on wood, broodstock holding at the hatchery is going, I won't say good, but better than prior years. I don't have a pre-spawn mortality number in front of me, but the fish are holding and looking pretty well. So they did go through the week before last and re-inject all the broodfish that's a hatchery holding pond. While they didn't see furunculosis in the fish or associated mortality at the hatchery, they did pick up furunculosis in the, I want to think if Cam would know the number, I think it was 50 adults that were transferred to Smith Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the right number, Cam? So those,
right.
A number of them broke with furunculosis. So as a precautionary measure, Dan went through and re-injected everybody at the hatchery pond. There was a few mortalities over the next couple of days after that, but all in all, we're doing pretty good. And then the Willamette stock that are being held at McKenzie, also knock on wood, are doing pretty good. Not quite as well as the McKenzie stock, so there's significantly higher mortality, but still much better than 2 years ago when we did this same thing. So,
yeah.
All in all, broodstock holding is doing pretty well. I guess that's probably all I've got for Willamette, and then maybe Cam, if you want to give an outplant update for...
Sure, but real quick, backing up just a bit, what did they re-inject with?
I think it was Oxy-Tet.
Because we've got to check on that, because the one of the last things that Rob Chitwood did was check efficacy of the Oxy-Tet on the frunk strain that they got at the Fish Performance Lab, and it was not effective, so they went back and re-injected with fluorphenicol. I thought, I'm like 99% certain that Bjork was on top of that, and...
Yeah, now that you say that, I think you're right. I think Dan had that information from Sarah.
Okay.
I think you're
excellent.
I know that Dan had the information based on that antibody resistance, so I think you're right. I think it was fluorphenicol.
Okay, which should work, although it's bloody expensive. It probably wasn't budgeted, but okay. Outplanting is going fine. We are in place at Dexter whenever they're doing outplanting. I've taken the liberty, because of the geographic proximity of the Fall Creek crew, to take them off of Fall Creek and put them at Dexter just for the fin clipping and DNA sampling and all of that. And then they go back on station at Fall Creek to finish their survey. So that hasn't really conflicted with the other contract for the Fall Creek work. And we've gotten 100% samples of all fish that have been outplanted into the Middle Fork and the North Fork Middle Fork. I don't have a hard count. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 jars filled with little chips of thin clips, and I haven't counted them. So yeah, some of them are very full, so it's a large, large number of fish. Probably 600 to 700 fish have been outplanted so far, but that's just eyeballing fin clips in jars. Reasonably successful, except now I don't quite know whether we will have a chance to get up into those upper... Remember, we've got sort of a skeleton crew, and we're going to try to get peak counts, just peak counts above the dams later in the season. But now with the fires, I'm not even sure we could do that. That's kind of a downer. But we are archiving the samples, and they are available should something come up in future years that requires the DNA from the Middle Fork and North Fork Middle Fork outplants. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Cam. And when you said 600 to 700, you're talking North Fork, Middle Fork?
And all the yards together. I'm saying okay. That's how many total have been put up there. We've got a cap of 700-ish. I'm just, to make things simple, rounded up from 687 and said we'll cap the North Fork, Middle Fork at 700, predicting okay. That there might be a conflict in the future if we had too many outplanted adults.
Gotcha. And there's been no outplanting above Hills Creeks thus far?
No, I've done Hills Creek and I just don't remember. I don't have the breakdown on how much went into each system, but
okay.
Most of the fish have gone up in the North Fork, Middle Fork, and some have at least a load, say 100 or 200 fish, I'm guessing, have gone up above Hills Creek.
Okay, cool. Thanks. All right. How about Lieber Catchery? Still kind of status quo there, Ryan?
Yeah, pretty much status quo. Still lots of trout moving out as normal for this time of year. Maybe only notable thing to report is one of the technicians did suffer an injury last week while outplanting or stocking trout. Resulted in a trip to the hospital and probably 6 or more weeks off of work. Some staffing challenges there, and obviously never good when you're dealing with injured employees. She was using the stocking trailer and just kind of caught her foot on the grip strut and took kind of a funny fall and fell off, hit the asphalt, and broke her hip. So,
Man.
They were able to, they had somebody, I think, working as a volunteer there who qualified. I think Kurt had her working at one point at McKenzie. So they were able to hire Jasmine. That was her first name, or I don't recall her last name. So they were able to hire a temporary employee to backfill for a few months.
Okay.
Other than that, nothing for Lieber.
Yeah. Ouch. Hip fractures, that's pretty major.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry to hear that.
Is she young? I mean, she'll recover?
No. She's talking about, Jennifer. You like her?
Oh.
You know Jennifer?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. So... Yep. Cam, I'll turn it over to you here. Talk a little bit about fish counts at Bennett Dams and at Lieberg.
Okay, I'm looking at Bennett counts right now. Of course, they've tapered way off. We've got a total of 714 non-marked Chinook adults over and 3,724 ad-marked adults over Upper Bennett, and much smaller numbers over Lower Bennett. We've got the totals, and they've been dispersed and updated on the web. Somebody clever noticed an error on the web page. The 2015 and 16 counts were, or 14 and 15 were identical. So an error was made along the way. We're getting that fixed now. The web counts will be corrected very soon. I've been spending quite a bit of time trying to understand the timing of the passage of fish at Minto and Bennett. Bottling that for some NOAA questions that have come up. Haven't come to any conclusions yet. It's extremely variable what happens in the North Santiam in terms of timing of fish over Bennett over years and timing of fish entering Minto over years. I'm puzzled. It's not a very tidy system. That's okay. That's science. At Lieberg, as you probably all know, with the help of the Corps, thank you very much, we got the EWEP folks engaged and agreeable to switching spill from the right bank side to the left bank side where the ladder trap is, and that has been spectacularly nothing. We have not had hardly any fish moving in either ladder the last few days, so it's really not conclusive whether it did or did not work. I'm expecting it to work. I'm anticipating that when we get this episodic pulse of hatchery origin fish attempting to get over Lieber late in the season, that typically starts about past, we've seen large pulses of hatchery origin fish that seem to be dazed and confused and lost. In August, that's 2010, 2015, 14, 15, 16, we had big pulses of hatchery origin fish trying to get over Lieberg. If we see that again this year, then we have the trap in place and we can pull out the thin clip fish. The trouble is I don't know whether we will see it this year, because one of the other things, the other legs on the stool, was increasing attraction of fish into the Mackenzie hatchery. So if we pull those fish out of the hatchery, into the hatchery, out of the river, then they are no longer available for a late push up through Lieberg. So I guess we have to wait and see. We have to wait and see if there's enough hatchery origin fish in the system after increasing catch efficiency at Mackenzie to make it worthwhile running the Lieberg trapping operation. But so far it's going smoothly, no problems. It's just small numbers of fish are moving. The counts for Lieberg have been posted to the web through, I think, through the 14th. So they're there for anybody to look at.
Great.
That's all I got for Lieberg.
Wouldn't that be funny if those the trap efficiency improvements at Mackenzie worked so well that we didn't have to do the removal at Lieberg?
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath waiting for it, but sure. It is pretty striking that that in a relatively low run size year, with a relatively smaller release of juveniles 4 and 5 years ago, Kirk picked up twice as many fish as he got last year in the hatchery. So it's all a puzzle and it's all just anecdotal, but it kind of looks like our evil plan is working. So yeah.
And how's PHAS looking by counts over the Lieberg Dam right now, Cam?
By count, about a week ago I looked at it. I did not look at today's data. It was sitting just under 20% above Lieberg based on counts of fin-clipped and unclipped fish, which always goes a couple of different ways. Since there's going to be some unclipped hatchery fish that are not accounted for in that, that would bias true PHAS higher, not bias, it would make true PHAS higher because unclipped hatchery fish got up there. At the same time, hatchery fish tend to fall back at a higher rate over Lieberg back downstream. So those two things balancing out, I'm not sure where we'll end up, but I'm confident we're not going to be in the 30-40% range like we were in past years. I think we'll end up at the 20 or lower percent range. And as I recall, this is the last year that the five-year-olds from an 870,000 fish release will come back. So next year is the year we would have fours and fives coming back from the 604 and 750 releases. And that'll be the real proof in the pudding on whether the reduction in program size, attraction into the ladder, Lieberg removal, and hopefully increased production above Cougar all come together and show us whether it's working.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Thank you, Cam. All right. Well, that brings us all the way through the end of all the updates. Chris Walker brought up earlier that we should talk a little bit about fish counts. I know Stephanie Birchfield was asking a question of Chris and some of the other folks in the Willamette FPOM group where those counts were. And they're available in a couple different spots right now. Chad and Doug kind of have the counts for Cougar and Fall Creek, and those are available to anybody that wants them. And we've got the Lieberg and the Bennett counts up on the web. And then, of course, the different hatchery managers have, you guys all have your own different spreadsheets of how you keep track of what you're doing. So some of you will probably remember, but a couple years ago, I started an effort to try to put all of those counts into one spot, into one spreadsheet, actually, and send it out monthly. And my goal was to try to get it out within the first week of each month, and it showed counts for the previous month. And so to help me in doing that, we've put a template into the contract for the Willamette Valley to have the hatchery managers kind of help me fill that out. And then I'll also be able to take the counts from Chad and Doug and throw those in there, and possibly the ones from Bennett and Lieberg dams as well, and kick that thing back off and get it functional again. So that's kind of my plan right now. And if there's any questions, we can talk about it. But it seemed to work pretty well. I think folks were interested in it when I originally did it. So we'd like to make it available again. It's just hard for me to do all on my own, but with help from some of the hatchery folks and some of our folks at the core, I think we'll be able to pull it off.
Hey, that sounds good, Andy. Would you like Chad and I to send you our updated spreadsheets? What would work best, or would you like us to go in and fill it in?
If you guys send it to me, I'll be happy to do it. And if you could send me the counts sometime, you know, early in the first week of each month that show the previous month's counts, that'd be perfect.
Okay.
And we could set up a little calendar reminder too.
Okay. No, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts or questions, things we need to discuss today?
Yeah, an email just came about 4 seconds ago from Lisa McLaughlin. They're experiencing some debris issues at Liebert Dam.
Oh, yeah, just pulled that up. Okay, thanks, Cam. I guess keep us apprised of, yeah, what goes on with that.
I'll just respond to the reply all to the email, so you'll get it.
Perfect. Cool. All right. Well, thanks everybody for accommodating the switch in time this month. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled program next month, and at that point, spawning will probably have commenced. So it'll be a busy time of year. Hopefully, we can get folks at least on the phone for a meeting in September. And I'll try to make it out and get to some of those spawning events as well.
Okay. Thanks, all.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.